Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Census numbers released this month show a tiny drop in the rate of poverty, but that's after 3 years of increases. The overall rate of poverty is at record highs, rates not seen since President Johnson launched the war on poverty nearly 50 years ago. One in five children live in poverty. There are sharp rises in food served at food kitchens, and then there was that troubling report last week of an actual drop in the expected lifespan of poor white Americans. True, many of these were young white men on drugs. But why aren't we hearing more about it, especially on the campaign trail? Social scientists are divided over whether the official rate underestimates the number of poor, or whether poverty is caused by a bad economy or by bad social choices. But we want to take a closer look today with Greg Kaufman, poverty reporter for The Nation. He joins us from WAMU in Washington. Greg, welcome back.
Thanks, Robin. Good to be with you.
And lay out some of this picture for us. 46 million people in poverty. That's 15% of all Americans. Give us some more numbers.
Yeah, that's one in six Americans. And the poverty threshold is, that means they're living on less than $23,000 for a family of four. And it's easy to get lost in numbers in this stuff, but There are some key ones that are important to hone in on. One number that doesn't get a lot of attention is that there are 106 million people living at just below twice the poverty threshold. So that's less than $36,000 for a family of three. And that last year, there were last census report, there were 103 million. So that rose. And the reason that's an important number is because that's really, a lot of economists feel, a point where people are struggling to pay for the basics. And it also shows the proliferation of low-wage work in this country.
Yeah.
Another really striking number is that there are now 20 million people living in extreme poverty. And that means less than half the poverty threshold, so about $11,500 for a family of four, and that's one in 15 Americans. And that's really directly tied to welfare reform, which most parties claim was a real success, but it needs a closer look.
Well, you know, I want to do that in a minute. I want to put that aside. But, You know, some more of these stats, you obviously disagree with the people who say welfare reform has been successful. We'll pick that up. But some other stats. Before the financial crisis, 14 states had child poverty rates of 20%. Now over half the states do, an increase there. And so that, you know, points to that this is not, we're not talking about a chronic problem here. We're talking about people plunged into poverty because of the financial crisis. And economists have done the numbers, and the cost of child poverty, for instance, we said one in five children in poverty, is more than $500 billion. And Harry Holzer is one who's extrapolated out, you know, lost productivity, crime-related costs, increased health care costs. So the numbers are huge. But let's just get to some of the prisms through which we can look at poverty.
Sure.
Let's talk politics. We'll hold welfare reform for a second. But Mitt Romney was actually one of the first in mentioning poverty on the campaign trail when he accepted his party's nomination. He said, "Today, more Americans wake up in poverty than ever before. They're our brothers and sisters, our fellow Americans." So, you know, people are complaining it's not being mentioned. He did.
He did. And hats off to him for mentioning the number of people living in poverty in that acceptance speech. However, I have to also say he ran that ad campaign and also put it in a stump speech that Obama was stripping the requirement of work with welfare, which, you know, all the independent organization said was either Pinocchio's for Pinocchio's,
right.
You know, the maximum Pinocchio's, maximum pants on fire, et cetera.
We should rush to say what the truth is. You know, what happened was that governors, and many of them were Republicans, asked for some flexibility in the program that kind of nudges people to go from welfare. Well, it requires people to go from welfare to work. And the governors were granted that flexibility with the stipulation from the Obama administration that those states also increase their numbers of people moving from welfare to work. So that was a Pinocchio, as you said. But
yeah.
what are your other concerns about Mitt Romney, the candidate?
Well, I mean, just in that instance, I mean, that flexibility is really important because we know that welfare reform, people are working jobs for their welfare benefit, which people need to understand is only like 30% of the poverty line. So when people talk about welfare dependency and people just living off welfare, I mean, you're talking about what, like $6,500, $6,300 for a family of three. You know, you can't really live off that. But so people are trapped in low-wage work like, oh, In Philadelphia, a lot of moms are cleaning toilets in the Comcast building. Or in Ohio, I've spoken to people who are working in cemeteries or sweeping the county garage. And not that there's anything wrong with that work, but there's not much upside. Yeah. So a lot of governors were looking at a way to say, hey, what if we had those people instead participating in a GED program? Or what if we developed a program with a community college, with local businesses, so that people could get into living wages? So I had a big problem with that episode. Really, on both sides, it was a chance to talk about how the welfare law really works or doesn't work.
Well, in other words, I just want to make sure we've heard your criticism that, you know, they may be moving to work, but again, it's really low wage, cleaning toilets at the Comcast Center, for instance. And that brings up, are you disappointed in President Obama? He promised to raise the minimum wage from 7.25 to 9.50, and he didn't.
Yeah, I am disappointed that he didn't take up that fight and hope that either one would. And you know, actually, Governor Romney said he early in the campaign that he supported indexing the minimum wage to inflation. It's on video. The National Employment Law Project asked him about it, and then he flip-flopped on that. But yeah, I am disappointed. If it had been indexed to minimum wage, it would be over $10 an hour today. And you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's not just – that's why I talked about that 106 million people number. It's we tend to separate poverty from, say, the bottom third of Americans who are struggling with low wages. We have 50% of jobs in this country pay less than $34,000 a year. 25% pay below the poverty level for a family of four. That's according to the Economic Policy Institute. So, you know, we have to look at not just what's happening with people in poverty, but what's happening with people all the way up to you know, say twice poverty.
Well, you know, staying with politics, just for a couple last things before the break, there are others who are concerned about Mitt Romney's spending cuts. What would that mean for the poor? But just briefly weigh in on the 47% stat he used, saying people, 47% of Americans were dependent and not paying any income tax. Now, there are conservatives, Michelle Bachmann and others, calling for everyone to have some pay in. And in a debate last week, Virginia Democrat Tim Kaine, running for a Senate seat there, said he'd be open to a minimum tax level to ensure all Americans pay some income tax. Your thoughts on how that would impact the poor in just the few seconds we have before the break?
And how that would impact the poor? Well, the poor have really nothing to give, and they're already paying sales tax. Most of their income comes from work, so people are paying payroll tax, which is a higher percentage than Mitt Romney himself is paying. So, you know, when we look at our budget problems and our deficit problems, I don't think we can balance the budget or any of those problems on the backs of the poor.
Yeah. That's Greg Kaufman, a poverty reporter for The Nation. This is his beat. So we're going to continue to take a look at it. I want to know what he thinks about the social scientists who say, well, the numbers are actually inflated. People are getting so many benefits, you know, that lowers the rate of poverty. You know, also, what should be done? We know in this climate, it's not as if there's going to be a lot more benefits. So back with more from Greg Kaufman. We're talking about poverty, something that we don't hear enough about, and we'd love to hear from you if you have thoughts at hereandnow.org. But back in 1 minute, Greg Kaufman of The Nation, Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation with Greg Kaufman of The Nation magazine. Here's their poverty reporter, and we were talking about poverty. And Greg, I want to get right to, you know, the sort of the social science aspect of this. And let me just lay this out here. Stephen Malenga of the Conservative Manhattan Institute argued a few years ago that the truth about poverty is that it's the result of bad choices, not getting a degree, having children out of wedlock. And that's similar, of course, to the argument that Charles Murray made in his book, Coming Apart, that the culture, there's a culture of lower income white Americans, and he says it's grown more dysfunctional, more children born to unmarried parents, you know, again, lower levels of education. You say what?
I say that these guys are looking at poverty as a character flaw, and I look at poverty as an absence of money. I would go back to the numbers we just cited about the economy, the proliferation of low-wage work. 50% of jobs paying less than $34,000 a year. We know that one of the greatest stressors on relationship is is money, is financial. So I really think we should take a lot more time to look at the way our economy is working and the way that work supports are or aren't working,
rather than trying
to demonize people.
Well, and as we just said before the break, the numbers have been going up in the last few years, and many of those people going into poverty are a result of the financial crash, not some sort of culture of poverty. And I want to just mention Reading, Pennsylvania. It's about 88,000 people. Poor Reading. I have to like that town. But barely beat Flint, Michigan to have the you're not sure if you want it, title of poorest place in the U.S. Now, big industry used to keep that city going, Lucent Technologies, the Dana Corporation, they've been cutting back. The city's poverty rate up by 41%, and it would seem to be an example of poverty resulting from the bad economy. But the New York Times also says the city has an education problem, graduation rates below the national average. Tease that apart. Do you have bad graduation when you have kids who have to leave school to go work for the family? I mean, what comes first?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, education is obviously a huge issue, and I want to spend a lot more time delving into that. I mean, I spoke with a student at T.C. Williams High School in Fairfax last week after an event on poverty, a poverty tour by Tavis Smiley
right.
and Cornel West. And he was talking about where he'd come from in Louisiana and how they had books from 1980 and they had their classrooms were on platforms. You'd go from platform to platform that they were covered.
Yeah.
The platforms, obviously, they had classes in trailers. And then he came here and he has all of these resources and it's like a whole new world. And I think, you know, if we're going to fund education primarily through local tax base, you know, we're going to have these two separate school systems for the rich and the poor where some people are going to be prepared and some people are going to be less prepared. So I'm not sure if I answered your question. Can you?
That's one aspect of, you know, how education fits into the poverty picture. When you have poor towns or neglectful towns, you have bad schools. But I'm wondering, too, if you get into a spiral of poverty, you're less interested in school. You know, you're more interested in trying to put food on the table.
Right. People are doing whatever they can to survive, which takes me back to that question about welfare and flexibility and allowing people, and not just people who are on welfare, but we have to look at how, say, the community college system is working with local businesses to create opportunities for those sort of those mid-level jobs that will give people a opportunity at a living wage. That's another factor. Where are those mid-level jobs going to come from, and how do we prepare people for them?
Well, and just how many of the people are there? We started off by saying that the numbers have gone up, but some critics say those high numbers underestimate poverty. Bloomberg News say, you know, they cite economists Bruce Meyer and James Sullivan and conclude that poverty is actually lower. They include a family's income and government benefits and tax credits, and they say that gives a better picture of income. By the way, Bloomberg editors also make the point that they think that the government programs have reduced dependency and encouraged work. But they say it's a lower number when you add in the benefits. Your thoughts, Greg?
Well, you know, I'm not sure where they got their numbers from. There was a supplemental poverty measure introduced last year. I should just say, so people know, how the poverty measure was introduced is kind of an interesting and quick story. In the mid-1960s, a woman named Molly Orshansky worked with the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, to come up with the cost of a basic modest diet, and they multiplied it times 3, and they indexed it for inflation, and that's the poverty.
Yeah, it's
pressure.
Like a basket of food. You know, how much it costs to
I mean,
eat.
But
Bloomberg's saying if you add these benefits, though, you know, maybe we are doing better. And by the way, they call for more of the earned income tax credit. This was, you know, a Republican effort, President Reagan and Ford and others, you know, a tax break for the working poor. These are the poor that Mitt Romney cited. This is a benefit, you know, an entitlement that or a benefit that he cited. These are people who get a tax break, but it encourages them to work more. But again, this sense that maybe the numbers are less.
Right, they have a part of the argument right. The earned income tax credit would have, if it were counted, 5.7 million fewer people would have been in poverty last year. SNAP benefits, food stamps, 3.9 million fewer people. It would have reduced the rate to 13 percent plus. However, there's another side of the equation too, which is housing costs that vary by region, utility and energy costs, health care costs aren't included, child care costs, which are significant for everybody, you know, poor, middle, and I don't know about upper. But anyway, so when you put it all in, that's what the supplemental poverty measure is. The overall poverty number ticked up slightly. This is last – they haven't done it yet for this year, so mm-hmm. for 2010. Child poverty went down a little. Elderly poverty went way up because health care costs are yeah. included. So, you know, it really – you have to look at both sides of the ledger if you want to find an alternative measure.
Greg Kaufman, poverty reporter for The Nation, painting us a picture of poverty in America, a topic that does not get discussed. Greg, we love talking to you. We want you to come back to talk about, you know, how to dig out of this hole. And we'll do that real soon. Greg Kaufman, thanks so much as always.
Thank you, Robin.
And, you know, are you living in poverty? Are you observing it? Let us know your thoughts. HereAndNow.org, Facebook.com/HereAndNowRadio. We want to hear from you as well. Back in a minute, Here and Now.